Gabon's military leader sworn into office as the country's interim president.
The military leader pledged to respect what he called the charter of the transitional government.
Plus, the Turkish president visits Russia in hopes of revitalizing the Black Sea grain deal.
Putin said Monday the West was still restricting Russian agricultural exports, and Russia would be ready to return to it when all agreements relevant to the accord are fulfilled.
And harnessing the power of artificial intelligence to reduce discrimination and abuse. Today is Tuesday, September 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The leader of the coup that ousted Gabonese President Ali Bongo was sworn in on Monday. It comes amid international calls for a return to the constitutional order in the country. Moki Edwin Kinzuka visited Bitam, a town in northern Gabon near the border with Cameroon, to gauge people's moods to start us off.
Scores of people in Bitam watch Gabon's national television broadcasting the inauguration of General Brice Oligui Nguema as interim president. Bitam is a commercial town in the north of Gabon, near the Cameroonian border. During a ceremony attended by politicians, diplomats, clerics, the military, and a huge crowd of civilians, the military leader pledged to respect what he called the charter of the transitional government. He gave no details. Among the civilians watching the ceremony in Bitam was local official and opposition supporter Pierre-Marie Changa. Changa said he was not surprised that opposition presidential candidate Albert Ondo-Ossa did not attend the inauguration ceremony. He says Gabon's military should not think that the ongoing excitement is because civilians love General Brice Oligui Nguema, who has seized power. He says civilians are happy that Ali Bongo has been toppled, putting an end to his family's close to 60-year grip on power. The 69-year-old Ondo also did not attend a meeting between the transitional president and opposition party leaders on Friday. Ondo said he wants to discuss the future of Gabon with the general in the absence of other opposition members and close aides to the military leader.
Concernant la situation, moi je souhaite.
Changa said the new leader should bring honor to himself and Gabon's civilians by making sure the results of August 26 elections are processed, made public, and the winner inaugurated as president in the shortest possible period of time. Changa said this should not exceed 6 months. Gabon's main opposition group, Alternance 2023, asserts that the 69-year-old Ondo, a former government minister and university professor, is the rightful winner of the August 26 election. On Friday, Alternance 2023 urged the international community to ask the junta to hand power to Ondo. The African Union and the Economic Community of Central African States last week called for a rapid return to constitutional order. Gabon was suspended from the African Union following the coup, which the UN and France have condemned. The AU said it will impose further sanctions on the coup leaders if they do not restore constitutional order. Mba Dominic is an international affairs analyst at Omar Bongo University in Libreville, the capital of Gabon. Dominique says calls by the AU, ECAS, and Gabon's neighbors Cameroon, Chad, and Equatorial Guinea for Gabon's military leaders to hand over to civilians are like cries in the wilderness. He says similar calls for the military juntas in Niger, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Guinea to relinquish power or be punished have had no effect. The transitional leader takes over from Ali Bongo, who came to power in 2009 following the death of his father, Omar, who had led the Central African country since 1967. Gabon's opposition says the family ruled with an iron fist and confiscated most of the oil-producing nation's wealth. The general said Monday that he will be transparent in his leadership and render an account of his stewardship. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Bitam, Northern Gabon.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Zimbabwe's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, was inaugurated Monday for his second full term after a disputed national election in which he defeated challenger Nelson Chamisa. Mnangagwa took power in a 2017 coup that unseated longtime ruler Robert Mugabe, then won the disputed 2018 election. The results of the 2023 election are also being challenged. Naval vessels from the United States and the Philippines conducted a joint sail through parts of the South China Sea, lying within the South Asian nation's exclusive economic zone. The armed forces of the Philippines' Western Command said it was the first time that the Philippines and Washington have carried out a joint sail in the waters west of Palawan Island. The Associated Press reports that Russia has likely proposed that North Korea participate in three-way naval exercises with China, according to a lawmaker who attended a closed-door briefing with the director of South Korea's top spy agency. The briefing came days after Russia's ambassador to North Korea, Alexander Mastegora, told Russian media that including North Korea in joint military drills between Russia and China seems appropriate. Meanwhile, the New York Times reported that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un plans to travel to Russia this month to meet Russian President Vladimir Putin to discuss the possibility of supplying weapons for the war in Ukraine. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said that he thought it would soon be possible to revive the stalled Black Sea grain deal that helped get Ukrainian grain to the world markets. That optimistic comment came after talks on Monday with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Reuters' Francis McGuire is up next.
There was movement on the stalled Black Sea grain deal Monday. It came during a meeting in Russia between Vladimir Putin and Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan. After their first face-to-face meeting since last year, the Turkish president said he thought it would soon be possible to revive the agreement that helped get Ukrainian grain to market and ease the global food crisis.
In this context, we prepared a package containing new suggestions in consultation with the United Nations. I think it's possible to get results with this new process. As Turkey, we believe that we will hopefully reach a solution that will meet expectations in a short time.
Russia quit the deal in July, a year after it was brokered by the UN and Turkey. Moscow complained its own food and fertilizer exports faced obstacles and claimed that not enough Ukrainian grain was going to countries in need. Erdogan played a key role in convincing Putin to stick with the deal before. Putin said Monday the West was still restricting Russian agricultural exports and Russia would be ready to return to it when all agreements relevant to the accord are fulfilled.
I would like to reiterate our principled position. We will be ready to consider the possibility of reanimating the grain deal. I once again told the president about this today, and we will do this as soon as all the agreements on lifting restrictions on the export of Russian agricultural products, which are recorded in it, are fully implemented.
Russia and Ukraine are two of the world's key agricultural producers. Moscow has blockaded Ukrainian Black Sea ports since it invaded its neighbour. It's also threatened to treat all vessels as potential military targets after pulling out of the UN-backed deal. And ahead of Monday's talks, Ukrainian officials said Russia launched an overnight air attack on one of their major grain exporting ports. Putin has said before his country could return to the deal if the West fulfills a separate agreement made with the UN to facilitate Russian food and fertilizer exports. These Russian exports are not subject to Western sanctions imposed after the invasion. But Moscow has said restrictions on payments, logistics, and insurance have hindered shipments.
Francis McGuire of Reuters News. Ukraine said on Monday that Russian drones had detonated on the territory of NATO member Romania during an overnight airstrike on a Ukrainian port across the Danube River. That's something that Bucharest denies. Anna Chernikova reports for VOA from Kyiv, and she updated Flashpoint Ukraine host Steve Karish earlier with other developments on the battlefield.
Ukrainian armed forces had success in the Zaporizhia region and in the area of Bakhmut, and this was also both confirmed by the Ministry of Defense and by the Institute for the Study of War, and Ukrainian forces continue advance there. Also, it was official statement by the head of Ukrainian defense in the Zaporizhia region that Ukrainian forces managed to go first line of defense, which is the strongest line of defense of the Russian forces, which is extremely positive and positive news over the weekend for Ukraine. This is quite a success for the Ukrainian armed forces, especially considering that there were acquisitions that Ukrainian forces are moving slow. So this is one of the first big announcement from the Ukrainian officials.
That's Anna Chernikova in Kyiv, Ukraine, and you can listen to Flashpoint Ukraine each weekday at voanews.com or download it as a podcast in your favorite player. Poland plans to double its armed forces to 300,000 by 2035 with a combination of professional soldiers and volunteers. As Lucia Bacalet reports, Russia's full-scale invasion of neighboring Ukraine has triggered a huge number of Poles from all walks of life to sign up as volunteers.
Jedynka gotów, dwójka naprzód! Idę!
Professors, media workers, businessmen, and students. People of various backgrounds volunteer to join the Polish Territorial Defense Forces. It's the fifth and youngest branch of the Armed Forces of Poland. Since the start of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, interest has skyrocketed.
The war in Ukraine showed us that the similar forces in Ukraine played a very big role. So why not just maybe get into a little bit into army life ourselves.
Lieutenant Colonel Grzegorz Podolszanski, deputy commander of the 5th Mazovian Territorial Defense Brigade, says his brigade's demand for training has increased.
We planned to recruit and train 800 soldiers this year, but by June, when 200 volunteers were waiting outside our walls, and at the same time, knowing what is happening on the other side of the eastern border, we increased the number of soldiers in training by 200, and our goal is to reach 1,100 trained soldiers this year.
The main requirements to join the territorial defense are to be at least 18 years old and have Polish citizenship. Sebastian Nikityuk is 19, so he decided to spend part of his summer in training.
I'm on vacation now. I have one more year to study at school. And then when I graduate, I plan to become a professional soldier, studying cybersecurity.
Nikityuk is among 80 recruits who are taking a complex final exam after 16 days of basic training for the 5th Mazovian Territorial Defense Brigade. The test consists of 9 parts, from shooting and first aid to tactical exercises. Another recruit, truck driver Kamil Stalkowski, is confident he'll pass all of them.
Physically, this training is hard, especially if someone is not in shape. But in spite of being 35 years old, I can handle it well.
None of the recruits have to quit their job. Territorial Defense Service allows people to combine their civilian and military lives. A soldier has a choice to become a full-time soldier or have part-time employment.
Every single month, for one weekend, for 2 days, they are obliged to come to the unit and do their training. But for the rest of the time, they can basically live their civilian lives as they wish. And we always have to be ready to do whatever we are summoned to do.
Kravchuk Mayran serves this way. She has combined her army duties with her work in television for the last 4 years. She says joining the Territorial Defense Forces was her best decision, considering the current situation on the Polish-Belarusian border and the war in Ukraine.
I feel ready. I feel prepared. I have a background, a military background that makes me feel more secure. It's important for me to feel that I can deal with the situation that is happening right now.
Currently, 37,000 soldiers are serving here. 90% of them are part-time. Officials say their goal is to increase that number to 50,000 in the next several years. Overall, Poland plans to double its armed forces to 300,000 by the year 2035. Lesia Bakalets for VOA News.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. At least two people are dead and three are missing in floods that followed downpours in Spain. Reuters' Lucy Fielder has more.
Water gushes into Madrid's subway. Record rainfall caused deadly flooding in central Spain on Monday, shutting roads and temporarily closing down subway lines and high-speed train connections. Police were searching for a missing man in Aldea del Fresno, southwest of the capital. His car was dragged into the river after an avalanche caused by a sudden spate. His son climbed a tree and was rescued, emergency services said. Rescuers were also looking for a woman who disappeared near the central city of Toledo, where this bus garage was flooded, and for a man in his 80s who was dragged off by streams of water near Madrid. The sudden downpour on Sunday and into early Monday turned streets into rivers of mud that swept away cars and trash bins. Juan Carlos Penafiel was visiting Alcanar on the east coast.
We organized among ourselves to make ropes with towels and bedsheets and pull two young men clinging to columns up to the top floor to save them. It was terrifying, very, very scary, with small children and women. No one showed up. We were left to save ourselves.
Several roads in the Madrid region were closed as half a dozen bridges were torn down by water overflowing the riverbanks. Hail also fell in many areas. The rainfall was expected to wane. On Monday, the National Weather Agency lowered the alert level from orange and red to yellow.
Reuters reporter Lucy Fielder. A United Nations nuclear watchdog report seen by the Associated Press says Iran has slowed its enrichment of near-weapons-grade uranium. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma has those details.
The confidential report comes as Iran and the US are negotiating a prisoner swap and the release of billions of dollars in Iranian assets frozen in South Korea. Slowing its enrichment of uranium could serve as another sign that Tehran is seeking to lower tensions. The report by the International Atomic Energy Agency says Iran has 121.6 kilograms or 268 pounds of uranium enriched up to 60%, a far slower growth than in previous counts. Uranium enriched at 60% purity is just a step away from weapons-grade levels of 90%. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
A California tech startup is using artificial intelligence, or AI, to mask the accents of call center workers to reduce discrimination. But some say diversity is being erased. Matt Dibble has that story to round us out.
In the global economy, a call to a customer service center will likely be answered by someone in a faraway part of the world.
Just bear with me for a moment.
Call center workers can train for months to effectively communicate with customers whose native language and culture differ from theirs.
Okay, try that. Photographer.
Photographer.
Good.
Despite this training, accents often get in the way, says developer Sharath Narayana.
There are at least a few instances every single day of his life or her life that they go through some level of discrimination and sometimes straight up abuse.
Narayana is a co-founder of California-based Sanus AI, whose technology can adjust the way a speaker sounds with the goal of making an accent more relatable. A call center worker from the Philippines demonstrated.
Hi, my name is Iggy. I'm from Parañaque.
Hi, my name is Iggy. I'm from Parañaque.
The difference can be subtle, but Narayana says it is helping call center workers avoid abuse.
We are not trying to hide the fact that this person is from India or this person is from the Philippines, but this person would sound so clear, so confident, and so crisp that the other person would like to have a conversation.
Discrimination and abuse by callers are among the factors leading to high turnover among call center workers. Narayana himself once worked in such a center, and although he doesn't excuse the behavior of callers, he says he understands what's going on.
When they hear that accent, the first thing that I see is that lack of trust with this person. Hey, I've waited so long for my problem to solve. Now I'm connected to somebody that I can't relate to, or his voice that I cannot relate to. Can this person actually solve my problem?
Sociologist Anish Anish says tools like Sanis can help reduce the burden on call center agents. Anish, however, worries that it also points to what he says are dehumanizing trends in technology, namely erasing diversity.
Most of our communication is mediated through some technology. But when technologies start changing your accent itself, that is transforming you into your own avatar. Now, the driving force is not developing an understanding between human beings, but the driving force is transactional in the sense that things have to get functionally done.
Narayana says that of the workers with the optional SANA system installed, 97% of them are choosing to use it every day.
Because I was able to listen to one of my calls using Sanis, and wow.
It looks like English is my first language, where in fact it's not.
If there is a technology solution to it, where I don't have to change the way I sound, but the other person can understand me very, very clearly, why isn't it a beautiful thing?
For now, the AI seems to be helping people connect. Matt Dibble, VOA News, Palo Alto, California.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. And on behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and have a terrific Tuesday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Innovation is key to U.S. defense capabilities in the face of the challenges posed by the People's Republic of China, which Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin has called the United States' pacing threat. In remarks at the National Defense Industrial Association's Emerging Technologies for Defense Conference in Washington, Deputy Secretary of Defense Kathleen Hicks noted that for the past 20 years, the PRC has worked to build a modern military carefully crafted to blunt the operational advantages the United States has had for decades. But the one advantage they can never blunt, steal, or copy, no matter how hard they try, she said, is American ingenuity, our ability to innovate, change the game, and in the military sphere, to imagine, create, and master the future character of warfare. Deputy Defense Secretary Hicks announced a new project called the Replicator Initiative, targeted to help the United States overcome the PRC's greatest advantage, which, she said, is mass, more ships, more missiles, more people. The Department of Defense has already been investing in what it calls attritable autonomous systems, like self-piloting ships and uncrewed aircraft. Now is the time, Deputy Secretary Hicks said, to take all domain attritable autonomy to the next level, to produce and deliver capabilities to warfighters at the volume and velocity required to deter aggression or win if we're forced to fight. The Pentagon has defined attritable capabilities as those platforms that are unmanned, affordable, reusable, and which allow commanders to tolerate a higher degree of risk in employing them. Deputy Secretary Hicks said the goal for the Replicator Initiative is to field attritable autonomous systems at scale of multiple thousands in multiple domains within the next 18 to 24 months. She emphasized the goal can be achieved through teamwork by working closely with the private sector, including commercial, non-traditional, and traditional defense companies, collaborating with allies and partners, and partnering with Congress. We are in a persistent generational competition for advantage, declared Deputy Secretary Hicks. We must ensure the PRC leadership wakes up every day, considers the risks of aggression, and concludes today is not the day. Our goal is always to deter, because competition does not mean conflict, Deputy Secretary Hicks said. Still, we must have combat credibility to win if we must fight.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.